back together again, you and I chatting it up Tuesday style, July 23rd, 2024 on Connecticut Today, where we had a return visit from University of New Haven criminal justice lecturer and former supervisory Secret Service agent Bobby McDonald on the resignation of Secret Service Director Kimberly Cheadle after her testimony to members of Congress on Monday. Yankee Institute blogger Megan Portfolio stopped by with an update on the state's continued push for electric vehicles.
And you can tell the things are serious in D.C. about a particular subject or issue when both Republicans and Democrats, when you see some of the most conservative members of Congress sitting next to some of the most liberal members of Congress and agreeing about who has to stay, who has to go in an investigation. We talk about the continuing fallout from the assassination attempt on former President Trump a week ago this past weekend. Again, a return visit. We thank him, Bobby McDonald, University of New Haven criminal justice lecturer, and he served as a former supervisory Secret Service agent. Bobby will help us peel all this apart. Bobby, good to have you back again. Thank you, sir. How are you?
Hey, Paul. Great to be with you today.
What did you think of what you heard and watched maybe, Bobby, yesterday, heading into yesterday and now the eventual? And I don't think, Bobby, it comes as a complete surprise. Director Cheadle stepping down after hearing it really from both sides of the aisle. Give me your thoughts as a former member of the service.
Yeah, your comments are spot on. You know, you and I have been around a long time. And as you said, when's the last time you saw members of a congressional committee come together over a topic unanimously? It was inevitable. I think that the way that the Secret Service has handled this with its messaging coming out of the events of the 13th, the failures that day, the good response of the shift, not wanting to forget that we've had some victims here, injuries and a death. Our former president was nicked with that bullet. Mm-hmm. Could have been a lot worse. But the messaging has been horrible. And I think yesterday, the way that Director Cheadle, and it doesn't give me any joy to be saying this, the way that she chose to posture herself at that hearing without giving a whole lot of information, I think became a distraction. And obviously you could see blood in the water as we got to the later part of the afternoon.
How much, Bobby, is the not giving information a need-to-know thing, a security thing, versus just not wanting to be embarrassed? Was there stuff that now former Director Cheadle couldn't say that was on a need-to-know basis? It would have had to have been said maybe in executive session. Was that part of it or not?
Well, you know, those of us in the criminal justice system understand the need to maintain the integrity of investigations. And, you know, that becomes the flavor of the day now. I can't comment on something because of the ongoing investigation. But in this instance, Paul, we've had a number of eyewitness accounts in the press and to police departments. We have a number of videos taken from cell phone cameras showing the 20-year-old kid shimmying up the roof with his gun. So there's a lot of information already out there that if she wanted to go in there and kind of sanitize what she said, she certainly could have given them some information to chew on to, you know, allow for a discussion to take place without giving away the store.
We cannot, of course, Bobby, get in her head as to what her reasons were for her responses. I suspect she talked to personal attorneys for herself, and even I suspect the Secret Service has attorneys as well. Could she, you think, Bobby, have saved her job if she was a little more forthcoming? Now, she was to a point, said it was a complete failure, but was her hard edge there and her perceived intransigence just too much to overcome, or was it inevitable she would have to go?
Well, I think if she was to come out a little earlier in this process, you know, the Secret Service hadn't participated in any of the press conferences held by any of the entities that were involved here. The Secret Service works, as you've heard me say before, in concert with state, local, and other federal partners. Can't do what we do without them. But the fact that there really was no messaging at all whatsoever with respect from the Secret Service, I think if she had come out, stood up, been accountable for the situation, indicated some information that was coming through in the investigation and how they were moving forward. But the lack of information, the being cornered by four senators at the RNC in Milwaukee last week, I don't think the optics of that were very good. And it just seemed to me that once the train left the station, there was really no way to get it back on the track.
Bobby McDonald with us, University of New Haven criminal justice lecturer now, but he's a retired former supervisory Secret Service agent and managed special events and many presidential and details like that with diplomats back in the, mainly in the Obama days. Bobby, the gentleman, and forgive me, I don't have his name in front of me, but the acting director, do you know anything about him? And when somebody is put in that position, what's the first thing they should do? Is it a morale thing? Does he do a Zoom call? Does he start blasting out emails? Who is that gentleman? What do we know about him? And what would be the first thing, Bobby, you would do if you were in that position?
Yeah, his name is Ron Rowe. He was Director Cheadle's deputy, so he's kind of from a continuity of operations situation will flow in. The agency's going to basically run in its day-to-day operations, regardless of who's at the helm. But I think it would be incumbent upon him right now to, again, stand up and say, hey, let's acknowledge what happened on the 13th. Let's acknowledge our failures. Let's acknowledge the positive things. I certainly don't want to say the good things that happened that day, but let's acknowledge the positive things. And let's get ourselves rebooted. Let's reset here. We've got another NSSC for the DNC in Chicago in a couple of weeks. We've got two new details that'll be picked up, J.D. Vance, RFK, and now whoever Kamala Harris's vice presidential candidate will be. You've got the UN General Assembly that we have in New York every year, and then we have the home stretch into the campaign. The Secret Service men and women do a great job every day, granted not on the 13th of July, but they need to be given some support, some understanding, and a good leadership situation that shows, hey, I have a vision for where we have to go, whether he's the interim director or will ultimately take the spot. The agents need to know, hey, we've got your back. We know that the lifestyle that you live here with being away nights, weekends, holidays, away from softball games, away from this or that, they're going to go out and work as very hard as they can every day to make sure that our no-fail policy, which is very important, gets the confidence of the American people back in our corner, and that we go out and do the very best we can to keep our protectees safe every day.
Bobby, what was your reaction to reports that I guess surfaced over the weekend, primarily first in the Washington Post, that the Trump campaign had been asking for more protection over the past 2 years? What are your thoughts on that? And did that story, you think, tell the entire story or not?
I don't think it told the whole story. Look, the Secret Service, and I happen to work in that asset relocation or asset management office for a while, which is a very difficult situation to work in. The Secret Service only has finite assets. So when intelligence comes or information comes and Secret Service details request from headquarters different assets or levels of protection or manpower, personnel, whatever we're calling it these days, sometimes hard decisions have to be made. And I'm not saying there was a right decision made here or a wrong decision, but the fact of the matter is that if those hard decisions were made, then it's incumbent upon the director at the time, Kim Cheadle, to have stood up and said that based upon the intelligence that we had in front of us at the time, we provided X, Y, and Z. We didn't provide X, Y, and Z because of whatever reason. You have to be able to stand up and articulate why you may have made a hard decision here. You know, former President Trump is really not the former president detail that we normally have, where you have President Clinton and President Bush now who, you know, make appearances every now and then, but they're not holding outdoor rallies or they're not doing things of the size that former President Trump is doing. He's a very recognizable figure and can also be a very controversial figure. And if we had information that lent also to Iran looking to do some harm, and we let a 20-year-old kid get on top of the roof, boy, we really didn't have a very good day.
Yeah, and Bobby, you brought up something interesting. You know, Donald Trump, now granted he is officially running, he's the Republican nominee here, but even before that, going back a year, year and a half, I mean, look, people can love the guy, they can hate the guy or be in the middle. That's not the issue here. This is a guy who, if he says, hey, I'm going to be in X place coming up next week or the week after, the guy draws 20, 30, 40,000 people. I mean, it's not a lot of people to do that, and that's got to put an incredible strain on the Secret Service.
Well, it does, but this is what we do, Paul, and we've got to go out there and do the very best we can every day. You know, having done hundreds of protective advances, you know, there are so many times when you're staying in a hotel in Des Moines, Iowa, on the side of the highway, and we keep a pad and a pencil next to our next to our bed, because if you wake up at 2 in the morning and go, holy mackerel, I just thought of this, or did I do that, or did I forget this? The Secret Service owns that protective plan. We implement it with our partners. We oversee it and we supervise it and we bless off on it. And regardless of who was supposed to be where, we check and recheck and double check every time we do one of these events. And we have to be perfect every single day. And we were not perfect on July 13th.
Does the Secret Service, Bobby, does the service as it stands right now, are there enough people? How do they recruit? Should there be maybe, because I never see it. Now, maybe that's on purpose, but does the service have enough people now? And is the recruiting good enough? And if not, what should it be?
Well, all agencies within the criminal justice system are having trouble filling seats. You know, the Secret Service never used to have to recruit. When I went in 1995, you approached the Secret Service. They didn't need to come to you. Those days are gone. But the other thing we have to remember here, too, is that the Secret Service does a lot of different things that, in my opinion, Paul, maybe we don't need to be doing, and maybe we need to be concentrating a little bit more on protection. You know, the Secret Service investigates a lot of different crimes. Money crimes, credit card fraud, COVID relief fraud, mortgage fraud.
Yeah.
Hey, those things are nice, but let's be honest. You and I are never talking about those topics when I come on your show. We're talking about mostly protective-related issues, and that's where I think the Secret Service is going to have to reboot and reshift itself to its priorities to protection and its original counterfeiting of currency.
Yeah, and to close here, Bobby, I had a previous guest on who had a deep security background like you did. He wasn't in the service, but he was more in the military, but he knew people there. And he kind of said the same thing. Maybe part of this reboot you reference is to relieve it of some of those duties. And my other guest suggested that you put it into the executive branch here and you say, okay, you are a protective service. That's it. We'll figure out other ways to handle that stuff. Is that what you were driving at?
Yeah, I think that, look, the Secret Service is a unique organization. We have certainly have a culture that over the years has skinned its knee a little bit with various things, as I'm sure you remember. But the men and women of the Secret Service work hard, and it's the people on the ground level who go out and work hard every day and need to be supported. And look, the Secret Service agent who's doing an advance is never going to ask for something that they don't need.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody asks for extra stuff just to have extra stuff. You ask for assets and personnel and human capital power, or whatever we're calling it today. You ask for it because you think you need it. And we need to start trusting the agents on the ground who might say, hey, I need 6 people here. I need 12 people here. And it really doesn't matter where we need to get them from or where we need to fly them in. We almost lost one of our protectees, one of our major protectees 10 days ago. And if that was the case, you and I would be having a whole different conversation right now about these issues.
Former supervisory Secret Service agent Bobby McDonald, now teaching at the University of New Haven. Bobby, as always, good stuff. Thank you, and we'll talk down the road. Thanks.
See you on the next one. Thank you, Paul.
All right. Thank you, Bobby. Appreciate that. On that note, I don't know how else to segue, but just to say Megan Portfolio's here from the Yankee Institute and the Hartford Portfolio. How are you?
Doing well. How are
you?
I
mean, come on. Don't you know that Joe? Oh, Joe, it was so gallant
on,
what he did. Come on.
You know, I mean, I don't really get into the national politics that much, but listen, we all have TVs. We all saw what was going on.
Thank you.
If he was doing this gallant gesture, he would have bowed out.
Yeah.
He wouldn't have even entered the race. He would have called it quits.
Mm-hmm.
I did my one term.
Yeah.
Doing air quotes right now, fix the country.
Uh-huh.
I'm calling it a day. Now look what he's done. He's created an entire mess. Their entire primary is basically thrown in the
over,
garbage.
It's done.
and I've worked, you know what? I tell you what, I don't know what's going on in the Trump campaign, but I did a little work in campaigning prior to Yankee. And, you know, it's hard enough to pivot.
Yeah.
Your previous caller is me saying pivot now. It's hard to pivot from, you know, going from primary to general election. Can you imagine having to go from, like, one opponent and then the next? I don't envy those people.
Oh, yeah. And then the first thing, and, you know, I've worked on campaigns also, Megan, and what's the first thing you do? How much money do we have, right? You have those meetings. Okay, we want to do this. Well, do we have enough money? Yeah, seriously, it's crazy times. A bit closer to home, you have a piece up at the Yankee Institute. Again, Megan, you have people that are just worried about something, the trend to EVs, which, geez, I don't know about you, Megan, I see more and more EVs on the road every day without the state of Connecticut mandating that people buy them or try them. Gee, that whole thing about the consumer deciding what they want. That's a wacky thing, isn't it?
Oh, that terrible free market.
Yeah.
How dare they?
Yeah. Yeah. So what's going on?
Well, this is the I told you so piece of the week.
Yeah.
So the Greenies held a webinar last week. It was the Connecticut Roundtable on Climate and Jobs, and they're one of the larger, more active activist groups in the state. And so they had a webinar, and they finally admit that, gee, it's probably not possible to have everyone driving EV cars, no matter what we do here. And then they went on to list all the things that you and I have been talking about, you know, since last year. Like, what do you do in the city? What do you do with these multi-dwelling complexes where there's no charging? And they, you know, admitted that, gee, the cost is too much. And it's just crazy that they're finally admitting the fact that this isn't going to work. And it almost seems like they're kind of abandoning it. And I don't want to speak for them. This is just based on this one meeting that they held. But they were really big into this vehicle miles travel tax. It's this new scheme that they're working on in the Department of Transportation, where they want us all to reduce our driving by 5%.
Okay.
So
now I don't know whether
do that.
I don't know whether I ever told you, but now I hope this doesn't lower the esteem, the small amount of esteem you may have for me in your heart. But I actually participated in that study about a year ago, where they asked people to plug a little. I know, Big Brother. They tracked.
Yeah, but did you get your $50 gift card?
It was $100, and it was great. I got it, and I went right to Amazon.
Now I love you. I heart you even more, Paul.
Yeah. So there you go. But yeah, I took a part in one of those studies, and it was interesting because you remember that study where they said, well, you know, what if we went with a mileage tax instead of the state gasoline tax? Because as you and I have said, Megan, you know, the more EVs that are on the road, the less money that goes into the transportation fund, ding, 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 because of no gas tax. So the bottom line is, I would have, now this is just for your little old host friend here, I would have ended up paying the printout they sent me. They sent me PDFs, very nice. I would have paid an extra $5 a month if we went.
I'm not opposed to the vehicle mile tax.
Yeah.
If, I mean, this is an if. Yeah. Like, I don't want to be paying any more taxes at the pump because I'm already paying two.
Yeah.
So you pick one. And if you're going to pick the gas tax, then we need to start. And so I'm sorry to all the EV drivers, but you're kind of being free riders on the highway because you're not really contributing to the transportation fund. You got to have some kind of mileage tax for EVs. But that's impossible to manage. So the easiest way to really deal with this is the vehicle miles traveled if they get rid of the other taxes. This wouldn't be in addition to. So they were talking about that, and they also would like for us to all move closer to the cities, which that's ridiculous. I lived in the city when I was young.
No, I ran away from the city. No, I'm just kidding. But man, oh man, you know what, Megan, this drives me. Stop telling people what to do. Give people a job.
Seriously.
Stop telling people what they should do. Oh my God.
They had a couple good suggestions. Yeah. You know, they want the cities to be designed a little bit better, you know, make them more walkable, which I totally
I
think
like
that's
that.
Fine.
Yeah.
I think that's great to bring people in. I don't know where the money's going to come from. But I can get on board with that kind of stuff, building better cities, because then we can attract more people to come here and maybe lower our taxes.
You're not a heartless conservative. I knew that. You do have a softer side to you. There you go. See? Man.
I do. I just don't like the government telling me what cars I can and can't drive. But it was also interesting. So they finally admitted that. Mm-hmm. Another interesting part of the meeting was the guy that runs the roundtable for jobs, he wants the infrastructure built out, which that's fine.
All
I'm not really a big fan of the government paying for all this, because God only knows if the technology is going to change in 5 years and we just waste hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars on something that's obsolete. But besides the point, he's all up in arms because he's claiming that out-of-state workers are coming in to do these installations, which are cheaper, which I'm fine with if you're going to pay less money, because that means more chargers, because it's all about the environment. But he doesn't want this. He wants Governor Lamont to prevent any out-of-state workers coming in who can perform these installations at a cheaper cost, because they're not paying the union labor.
Well,
interesting enough, the guy that runs the board chair of the organization is actually he's a union boss for the electrical.
I'm
so
shocked.
Like, is it the environment or is it the creators that think
yeah,
union?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That's when they do stuff like this, it's like, is it really about the environment or is it about making money? I worked in sales. I worked in the electrical industry.
Okay.
And, you know, anything that was green or anything that had to do with solar, uh-huh. I mean, that stuff is way more money. I mean, we marked it up more and it was more expensive.
Wow.
Just because it was green. And so this stuff is just more money inherently because it's green.
And you just admitted that on my show with my thousands thousands of listeners out there. Have you repented?
No, I have not. I spent every last money, every last penny of my commission.
Beautiful.
Now I'm a homeowner.
Well, that's a whole nother story for another day. Megan Portfolio, check it out. Check her out, the Yankee Institute and the Hartford Portfolio. Wow. See, we got a confession out of her. She was on commission at one time and damn proud of it. All right.
Yeah, yes, I was. But burnt me out. But I'm a lot happier doing this because someone needs to watch these knuckleheads in Hartford.
Yes, and Megan does that every week or sometimes twice a week. Megan, thanks, and we'll chat with you next time. Thank you.
Have a good week. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.